imagine my day.
Now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Riding my day.
Well, another week living in Trump land that has finally ended. I was very, very moved this afternoon when I watched Barack Obama's speech to students and faculty and guests at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign campus. It was, just seeing him, just seeing Obama standing up, giving a speech in understandable English, measured cadences, no hysterics, practically zero references to himself, and speaking in a manner that only became stark in its comparison to this moron in the White House when you consider the moron in the White House gets up and jabbers every chance he can get, nonsensical phrases, half sentences, word groupings, ugliness, racism. Oh my God. But Obama did deliver a blistering criticism of the political tactics. He stayed away from personal attacks. I know that it's going to be spun by the right-wing media in this country that Obama attacked Trump. He did not attack Trump. Obama wouldn't lower himself to attack Trump. His criticism was about Trump's political tactics. He said that those tactics included fear and anger. During the speech, he said this, quote, "It did not start with Donald Trump. He is a symptom, not the cause. He's just capitalizing on resentments that politicians have been fanning for years, the fear and anger that's rooted in our past," which, of course, is what we've talked about on this podcast so many times. So many times. The Republican Party and American conservatism, which, as Obama pointed out, using example after example, is not conservatism, but it still has co-opted the label. That's what produced Trump. Trump is an unconscionable beast who has been lurking in the shadows for 40 years. And the Republican Party had to create a pathway for this monster to seize power with the help of his Russian allies. Jesus. Obama also defended his administration from the near constant criticism by this useless lump of flesh in the presidency. Obama noted the capture and killing of bin Laden and the Obama administration handling of the economic collapse of 2008. You know, this is something that for some reason, maybe it's because we Americans just refuse to consider economics on any level. We just don't talk about it. You know, how much is in my paycheck? How much is my raise? How much can I save? What's the latest investment I can get on board? We don't talk about economics. We don't take a look at this carefully structured pyramid, this house of cards that capitalism has built in this country. And it's a house of cards that only benefits people at the top. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse. And under Trump, it's probably reaching its apex with this $1 trillion tax cut for the wealthy that he engineered. But we don't talk about that. We don't talk about how Obama saved this country and probably the world economic order in 2008 when everything collapsed because of the greed and the filth and the lying and the cheating of these goddamn horrible capitalist pigs who can never get enough. Even when they have everything, it's not enough. And they just ripped and tore and stole and beat and lied and cheated and still every single rotten trick that they could come up with. They invented instruments of capitalism that had no meaning whatsoever. You tell me what some of those terms meant. They don't mean shit, except millions of Americans wound up losing everything. Could Obama have done more? I don't know. And you know why I don't know? Because I'm like most Americans. I don't know shit about economics. But we don't know enough about how Obama saved this country's ass and shoulders and head and neck and arms and legs and, you know, saved the country, economically speaking. And he did it while this lump of crap named Donald Trump was constantly attacking him, saying he wasn't an American. Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, when I think about what Obama had to deal with for 8 years, and I look at how healthy he remained physically and mentally and morally, and his wife remained healthy physically and mentally and morally, and his children, with 8 years of unrelenting attacks on just about everything about him, his policies, his background, his race. Like Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high. And then you take a look at this pig that's in the Oval Office now. Now he wants to arrest everybody at the New York Times, because one of his people wrote a piece that the New York Times agreed to publish, which I said yesterday, and I'll say it again, was a big fucking mistake. But in listening to Obama and comparing Trump, Jesus Christ, it's like comparing a world-class athlete in perfect physical and mental shape, Obama, with a slob, a degenerate bastard who's never read, does not read, watches television 8 hours a day, corrupts everything he touches, has a diet that you wouldn't feed to the hogs on some pig farm. And yet he's the one who's president. Jesus Christ. So I'll just for shits and giggles, I'll ask again. You people who decided that Hillary Clinton was such a bitch that you would no more vote for her than Hitler, and you voted for Jill Stein, you happy yet? You happy now? Jesus. And Obama pointed out, he said, let's remember when this economy started improving. Yeah, it didn't start with this miserable fuck in the Oval Office. Now, as the New York Times puts it, the address from Trump today comes as the former president and first lady are trying to delicately re-enter the political fray ahead of the midterm elections. And I think they should. I don't think Michelle or Barack Obama are the one-off type of couple. Okay, we did our presidency. Now let's go play. They happen to be the most powerful couple in Democratic politics right now. And the difficult part, because this country is so sick, the population of this country is so morally and emotionally bereft and crashing onto the rocks that when you have two decent people, well, beyond decent, two exemplary people, Barack and Michelle Obama, who are trying to make some political statements and points and, yes, influence people to vote Democratic and put a stop to this shit. Because we're so fucking sick in this country, this will also motivate the Nazis and the Klansmen and the white supremacists and the morons and the idiots and these people who support Trump to go to the polls too. But in a just and fair world, so what? Are we at the point where these cretins, these troglodytes, these morons outnumber just plain old decent people who want to see Trump go so fucking far away he just becomes a blip on the horizon? We're going to find out in a couple of months, aren't we? And what's particularly disgusting to me about this bastard Trump, he constantly uses Obama on his Twitter to energize his fucked up supporters. In the meantime, Democratic incumbent senators are struggling for re-election in states where Obama has never been particularly popular. And this is a part that is maddening to me. It's maddening to me. It's the white people out there in those states where Obama was never particularly popular, those working class, those rural voters who don't have a fucking clue that Barack Obama saved their asses repeatedly. They don't have a clue. Republicans also continue to use Obama's image in campaign ads. Republicans do. Like, as the Times reports, the special House election in Pennsylvania and the West Virginia Senate contest, where the Republican candidate, Patrick Morrisey, in West Virginia, boasts of his legal career suing to stop Obama policies, like Obamacare, like the Affordable Care Act. It's just stunning to me that there are people out there this fucking instant who are alive only because of the Affordable Care Act, whose babies are alive only because of the Affordable Care Act, whose mom and dad are alive only because of the Affordable Care Act. And yet these great, graceless bastards will vote Republican, cutting their own white, ignorant throats. Jesus. To avoid the traps that these Republicans are so good at setting to motivate the inherent racism that every white American above a certain age has, Obama has chosen carefully the places where he will assert his political influence or try to. Like last year in Alabama, he did robocalls to support Senator Doug Jones's upset victory in Alabama over the child molester. Upset victory over a child molester. Do you realize what I just fucking said? Upset victory over a fucking child molester. Obama used robocalls instead of showing up and doing a more high-profile public appearance. And he's also stuck, and if you watch this today, you saw some of it today, to a more elevated rhetoric that contrasts with Trump's idiotic, brawling, stupid, rambling, incoherent bullshit that he spews out at every one of these campaign stops that he makes. And his brain-dead audience loves it. Loves it. In an address in South Africa this summer, he denounced what he called the politics of fear and resentment. And if you remember the eulogy that he delivered for Senator John McCain, he took a broad swipe at Trump without naming him when he described, quote, politics that pretends to be brave and tough, but in fact is born of fear. And he wrote an email yesterday to supporters of this grassroots organization, Organizing for America, which is one that he founded. And the Times says in the email he wrote, quote, I'm asking you to be neither blind to nor dismayed by reality, but motivated by it. Be neither blind to nor dismayed by reality, but be motivated by it. He also said, quote, those who believe in democracy and civil rights and a common humanity will always have the upper hand, end quote. In a moral universe, the one that Dr. King hoped existed, that's probably true. But whoever wrote that cheesy op-ed piece, the anonymous one the other day in the New York Times, referred to Trump's amorality. And it has spread, and it continues to spread. And Obama has to be careful when, you know, he tries to help. But as one person familiar with Obama's thinking, who asked not to be named, discussing this sort of stuff, but he's quoted, or she's quoted, New York Times, this, quote, he's acutely aware that he has a mixed record of success when his name is not on the ballot. We understand that we energize the other side like very few people do. So we have to be thoughtful about where we campaign. Yeah, there's that, isn't there? A decent man, an honest man, an honorable man, a dedicated man, a competent man, an intelligent man, a forthright man, a man who doesn't cheat, lie, or commit adultery, a man who is decent, clear thinking, progressive, has to be careful in the fucking United States of America where he goes to talk, because of all those qualities I just named, he will motivate people who do not have those qualities and fucking never will. That's where we are in this country. That's where we are. As the Times puts it, the result is a strategy of big events in blue corners of the country, quiet fundraisers with donors, and a series of digital videos or robocalls meant to drive Democratic attention and turnout in a targeted way. The Times says he's also made a priority of helping individual candidates in governors and state legislative races by working closely with former Attorney General Eric Holder, who has also founded a group called the National Democratic Redistricting Committee, which is focused on expanding Democratic state power in advance of the next round of congressional gerrymandering. Certainly, we're aware of this monster that has been created by a series of inventions and mathematical computations, the internet, by hundreds, if not thousands, of people. This tool of eventually our destruction, that right now is a tool of what? Information spreading, whether the information is lies, deceit, bullshit, or truth. Internet doesn't care. It spreads it all. But while we have this tool, and before it eventually turns on us, which it will, I don't mean the internet is going to develop arms and legs and fangs. If either you know what I'm talking about or you don't, and I'm not going to stop and explain it. But as long as we have this tool now before it has turned on us, this is what should be used, the computational expertise of computers, to order the districting of states so that neither party can fuck with it or change it or come up with this gerrymandering bullshit. But that'll never happen. That'll never happen. Patrick Rodenbusch, who's the communications director for this Eric Holder group, said, quote, "There is no one else in the Democratic Party that is able to focus people's attention on an issue the way Obama can." Obama's next political appearance will be September 13th at a rally in Ohio with Richard Cordray. He's running for governor, Democrat, in a state that is also one of the top targets for the Eric Holder effort, the National Democratic Redistricting Committee. And then there's some other stops that Obama will make during the fall that haven't been announced yet. Organizing for America, the organization that Trump set up, has launched a parallel effort focused largely on House and state legislative races, something that Ralph Nader and Jill Stein just couldn't get their hands dirty doing. State races? Oh, never mind. I'm just going to run for president and fuck everything up. Nader did it. Stein did it. Nader gave us Bush. Stein gave us Trump. Yeah, the numbers don't lie. I don't give a shit who you voted for. But the numbers don't lie. So this effort launched by Organizing for America, the group that Obama put together, is focused mostly on House races, U.S. House, and then state legislative races too. And according to the New York Times, they've trained 200 team leaders around the country, many of whom are focused on training groups that can volunteer for these U.S. House of Representative campaigns volunteer to get the vote out, to educate us, to let us know what the Democratic candidates stand for, who they are, why it's absolutely necessary to elect them. Michelle Obama, according to New York Times, has decided, for now at least, to avoid any explicit candidate advocacy. She's chosen instead to put her energy with another new group called When We All Vote. That group has been gathering celebrity endorsers in an effort to launch a major voter registration drive later this month. Other co-chairs of this project include Tom Hanks, Janelle Monáe, Faith Hill, Tim McGraw. And in a conference call with organizers 2 days ago, when she announced events that she would attend later this month, she said, quote, I want every single one of you to host events in your community to get registered and to get people fired up. That's a major thing that is a major concern. You'll pardon the double use of the word major. There, I used it 3 times. Of mine. And that is, I don't think there's anybody in this country who is rational, which I immediately eliminate 62 million people who voted for this asshole. But the rest of us. The other 270 million of us. I don't think there's anyone above the age of 13 who isn't aware of what this rotten bastard has done, this Trump thing has done to us. And with 2 Supreme Court judges put on the Supreme Court by this monster, how long after the birds have picked every bit of flesh off his bones, or I should say the worms, long after this filthy man, it no longer exists in anybody's memory except in history books, the 2 people that he got on the Supreme Court will be continuing to fuck this country royally. That's Trump's gift. But the main thing that worries me politically, the main political thing that worries me, Christ knows I've got other things I worry about, but although I'm coming to realize there's nothing I can do about it, so why worry about it? Yeah, I know. That's what everybody's mother used to say, right? Well, you can't do anything about it. Why worry about it? But it's the idea or the fear that people will not go out and vote on November 6th. And flip the U.S. House into a body that can expose what this filthy, degenerate Nazi is doing. I know we're all tired of hearings and investigations, but it hasn't affected any of us. The reason we're tired of it is because that's all MSNBC talks about. That's all Fox talks about. It's 95% of what CNN talks about. And if you watch these cable channels, like, God help me, I do, you come to believe that that's all that's being talked about. Thank God I have a teenager who can let me know there are other things much more important. But my fear is that the people who are eligible to vote and to put a stop to this insanity, at least put the brakes on it until we can get rid of this monster, that for some reason they won't go vote on November 6th. For some reason. I have no idea what the reason could be. I hope that doesn't happen. I honestly hope that doesn't happen. I hope people will go vote. I'll be right back. You know, my reaction to the anonymous op-ed piece in the New York Times yesterday was, I don't know if other observers had come to the same conclusion that this was a shit piece. I'm not saying it wasn't true. Of course it's true. I'm not saying the New York Times made up anything. Of course it did not. But the author of the piece, whoever he or she is, and I'm going to use the male pronoun in talking about this, but the author of the piece displayed himself to be 180 degrees away from the way he presented himself and the people inside the Trump White House. They're not saving the republic. They're not protecting the American people. And I got into that last night. Michelle Goldberg this morning in the New York Times said pretty much the same thing about the corrupt bargain of the so-called adults in the room. I mean, what the fuck does that mean? That's one of the phrases that the op-ed writer used. And as she points out, they're not restraining Trump. They're making him more powerful. What Goldberg wrote in part is this. On Wednesday, the second day of Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court confirmation hearing, Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat of California, asked him a straightforward question about Robert Mueller. Harris asked, quote, "Have you discussed Mueller or his investigation with anyone at Kasowitz, Benson & Torres, the law firm founded by Mark Kasowitz, President Trump's personal lawyer?" End quote. Kavanaugh stumbled. He repeated the firm's name as if he wasn't sure he'd ever heard it before. He told Senator Harris he didn't know everyone who works there and asked her in several different ways who she was thinking of. Kamala Harris, a former prosecutor, said, quote, "I think you're thinking of someone and you don't want to tell us. Who did you have a conversation with?" End quote. Throughout the exchange, which continued for several minutes, Kavanaugh was evasive. When she entered the hearing room yesterday, Kamala Harris told reporters, quote, "I have good reason to believe there was a confirmation. Information that I've received is reliable, and I asked him a clear question, and he couldn't give a clear answer," end quote. Goldberg then writes, "As I write this, we don't know what Harris's information is. The exchange hinted at a potentially scandalous conflict of interest, though Kasowitz's firm has denied that any conversation took place. And when Kavanaugh was questioned again by Harris on Thursday, he denied it as well. Whatever emerges, Kavanaugh, under questioning from Democrats, offered no comfort to those who fear he's being put in place to protect the president." Senator Richard Blumenthal asked if Kavanaugh would commit to recuse himself from cases involving Trump's, quote, "personal, criminal, or civil liability," end quote. But Kavanaugh would not do so. He danced around a question from Senator Dianne Feinstein about whether a sitting president can be required to respond to a subpoena. He didn't answer a question from Senator Patrick Leahy about whether a president can pardon himself. There are plenty of reasons Kavanaugh should not be confirmed. Leahy made a credible case that the judge once lied under oath about his knowledge of a scandal involving documents stolen from Senate Democrats, which happened when Kavanaugh was in the Bush administration. If Senator Susan Collins, the Republican of Maine, were actually committed to preserving Roe v. Wade, she would raise the alarm about a leaked email in which Kavanaugh questioned the idea that the abortion decision is settled law. But realistically, Goldberg writes, barring a last-minute outbreak of conscience from two Senate Republicans, she doesn't name them, but they're Murkowski and Collins, Kavanaugh will soon sit on the Supreme Court. He'll owe his elevation to Trump, who is in effect an unindicted co-conspirator in a campaign finance crime that helped him achieve his minority victory. There's every reason to believe that Kavanaugh will shield the president from accountability or restraints on his power. Yet even Republicans who think Trump is a menace are desperate to confirm this judicial pick. So what we have here in miniature is the corrupt bargain Washington Republicans have made with a president many of them privately despise. They know Trump is unfit, but he gives them tax cuts and right-wing judges. Those tax cuts and right-wing judges in turn strengthen the president's hand, buying him gratitude from rich donors and potential legal cover. Republicans who participate in this cycle seem convinced that the situation is and will remain under their control. And on Wednesday, as you likely know by now, Goldberg writes, the New York Times published an anonymous op-ed by a senior Trump official headlined, "I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration." It was revealing, though not necessarily in the way the author intended. We already know that many of Trump's closest aides hold him in contempt. What's fascinating is how this official, the one who wrote the op-ed, who describes this president as amoral, anti-democratic, and reckless, rationalizes working for him regardless. The person wrote, quote, "We want the administration to succeed and think that many of its policies have already made America safer and more prosperous," and then added, "There are bright spots that the near ceaseless negative coverage of the administration fails to capture. For instance, effective deregulation, historic tax reform, a more robust military, and more," end quote. And digressing from Michelle Goldberg's piece, these are precisely the points that I tore to pieces last night. She continues, "This is the quintessence of the Trump-enabling Republican. He or she purports to be standing between us and the calamities that our ignorant and unstable president could unleash, while complaining in the very same op-ed that the media doesn't give the White House enough credit. This person wants the administration to thrive because it has advanced Republican policy objectives, even as he or she argues that the administration is so dangerous that it must be contained by unprecedented internal sabotage." Since this dystopian regime began, Goldberg writes, "I've wondered how Republicans who collaborate with Trump, despite knowing he's a disaster, live with themselves. Why hasn't a group of White House staffers quit in protest and then held a press conference? Why haven't Senators Bob Corker and Ben Sasse, both of whom have said that the anonymous op-ed matches their own understanding of Trump, Why haven't they done more to stand up to him? Why aren't former officials like Rex Tillerson, Gary Cohn, H.R. McMaster telling us publicly what they saw on the inside? How is it that none of these people have managed to behave as honorably as Omarosa Newman, who at least put her name to her words and brought us evidence of what she witnessed? One answer is that they care about the norms of American democracy, or at least some of them, but not quite as much as they care about the agenda of the Republican Party. If Kavanaugh weren't confirmed, it would be a profound blow to Trump, and not just because he would look weak and disappoint his evangelical base. Without Kavanaugh, Trump wouldn't be assured of a conservative majority on the Supreme Court, and when it rules on him and his administration. With Kavanaugh, the tie-breaking vote on the Supreme Court will be a right-wing apparatchik chosen in part for his deference to executive power. A vote for Kavanaugh is thus a vote to give Trump a measure of impunity. Republican senators who know the president is out of control have a choice. They can maintain a check on his ill-considered autocratic inclinations or solidify right-wing power on the Supreme Court for a generation. It's obvious which way they'll go. Maybe they'll tell themselves having adults in the room at the White House makes it all okay. Michelle Goldberg, writing for the New York Times. Another one of my journalistic heroes. All right, we're going to take a break. I'll be back in a moment. Stick around. You know, let me go back to, for a moment, to Obama giving the speech today at the University of Illinois. And, you know, he made the point again that rational people, reasonable people, intelligent people, balanced people, stable people make. And that is that name-calling is just a waste of time. And, you know, when I hear somebody say that, like I heard Obama say it today, I immediately blush because I think about what I do on this program, this podcast. If I had to eliminate the name calling, well, there goes 80% of the podcast, right? So what are you supposed to do when you are confronted with a huge venomous, poisonous, vicious, fanged rat staring you in the face? Well, are you supposed to say, oh, hi, rat? Or are you supposed to say, hi, creature? Or are you supposed to pick up a fucking stick and beat it to death? Aren't you supposed to say, look at this crazy goddamn rat that's about to attack me? Somebody help me kill this fucking rat! Now, I get what Obama's saying, and I get what a lot of people who are much calmer and more balanced than I have said, have emailed me, have texted me, have said to me, you know, you ought to back off a little bit because, you know, who wants to hear all the name-calling? I have no idea at this moment as I'm talking to you. I don't know if I have 3 subscribers or 3,000. I have no idea. I have no idea if anybody cares what is said on this podcast or not. I know I care. And there simply is no way in hell that I could sit here for 2 hours and more or less I mean, nobody's holding a gun to my head, but more or less be focused or have my topics be focused on this monster in the White House without using the kind of language I use, without the kind of terminology, without, in other words, calling this fucking rat a fucking rat. I don't know how else to do it. I wish I were as calm. Oh, shit, I wish I were Obama. But I wish I were as calm as him, as rational as him, as balanced as he is. Never happened. That's why he is somebody that I will always, for the rest of my life, he's someone I will look up to and have nothing but the deepest respect. But I know I'll never even be in the same – forget the same ballpark with him. I'll never be in the same county with him where it concerns the hold he has on himself. I'll be back in a moment. Stick around.
Paperback Writer.
Hey, Truth Seekers. I have an important update for you about my upcoming memoir, A Hunter Thompson-esque Journey of Experience, Observation, and Political Awakening – of yours truly. It's about 90% finished and soon headed to the publisher. It's posted in book form on the Kickstarter page for supporters who pre-ordered the book. And you can read it online right now. Just go to the Kickstarter page. Photos, hate mail, and other memorabilia will be added to the print version. And I think you'll love that. Did you miss the pre-order offer? Well, if you did, don't worry. You now have a second chance to order the book online. And since all the original rewards are claimed, I'll sign your copy as a special second chance pre-order. Thank you. So visit MikeMalloy.com for all the details. Oh, and coming soon, watch for updates on the fall book signing glamping weekend with the Malloys in the North Georgia Mountains. Keep checking MikeMalloy.com for more information. All righty, we're back. A little bit more on Obama's speech today in the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. I guess that's the way you pronounce it. Hell, I lived in Chicago for 3.5 years. I don't know, right? Anyway, during his address today, Obama unloaded on Trump several times. Not enough, as far as I'm concerned. And he didn't say the things I would have liked to have heard Obama say, and he never will, because Obama has a lot more class than I do. And Obama wouldn't get down in the shit with Trump. He just wouldn't do it. Whereas I would get there. I'm there every night. But anyway, on taxes, here are just some of the more prominent examples of Obama pointing out the obvious during his speech today about this monster in the White House. Obama went after Trump and the Republicans, obviously, for offering tax cuts to wealthy Americans while neglecting the impact of what this is going to have on the nation's deficit. Anyway, Obama said this, a quote, "With Republicans in control of Congress and the White House, without any checks or balances whatsoever, they've provided another $1.5 trillion in tax cuts to people like me, who I promise you don't need it and don't even pretend to pay for them. It's supposed to be the party of fiscal conservatism. Suddenly deficits do not matter to these people," end quote. Now, if you remember back in December, the monster in the White House signed something called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The orange monster and his enablers in the Congress said, oh, well, this simplifies the tax code and it's going to increase economic growth. Isn't that what they always say, huh? The biggest economic period of economic growth that we had was under Clinton. After Clinton passed or managed to manipulate the Congress into passing a tax increase in 1993, very early in Clinton's administration. And as a result, there was about a decade of unprecedented growth until George W. Bush came in. And when Bush took office, the budget deficit was zero. Yeah, we had 2 years of balanced budgets, so the last 2 years of the Clinton administration. And the national debt was being paid down because there was a surplus of income to the government. Well, Bush took care of that real goddamn quick, didn't he? Oh, never mind. That was a million years ago. Where was I? On the Charlottesville horror, where Trump fully identified with Nazis and Klansmen and killers, Obama said this today, quote, "We are Americans. We're supposed to stand up to bullies, not follow them. We're supposed to stand up to discrimination, and we're sure as heck supposed to stand up clearly and unequivocally to Nazi sympathizers. How hard can it be," he asks, "saying that Nazis are bad?" End quote. Yeah. Obama said today that it was up to voters to hold these racist groups accountable and to make sure that they don't feel emboldened because one of their kind is in the White House. Obama said, when you vote, you got the power to make sure white nationalists don't feel emboldened to march with their hoods on or their hoods off in Charlottesville. And you know what Trump said, according to Bob Woodward's new book, Fear, Inside the Trump White House? Woodward reports that Trump was furious about being pressured to condemn violent racist extremists after that attack in Charlottesville that left Heather Heyer dead. Washington Post put it this way, quote, "At the urging of advisors, he then condemned white supremacists and neo-Nazis, but almost immediately told aides, quote, that was the biggest fucking mistake I've ever made and the worst speech I've ever given." That's according to Bob Woodward's book. Biggest mistake you've ever made, you piece of shit, you piece of shit, you. Jesus, God. I can't even, you know, every time I see this guy on television, I just, well, you know, probably the same thing you feel. On politicizing the Department of Justice, which Trump has done, Obama criticized Trump for the series of tweets attacking Jeff Sessions. And Jeff Sessions was no friend of Obama's. During Obama's tenure in the White House, Jeff Sessions was a constant thorn in the side. But Jeff Sessions is not a punk-ass congressman from Alabama anymore. He's the attorney general, right? Obama said today, quote, "It should not be Democratic or Republican. It should not be a partisan issue to say that we do not pressure the Attorney General or the FBI to use the criminal justice system as a cudgel to punish our political opponents or to explicitly call on the Attorney General to protect members of our own party from prosecution because election happens to be coming up." Now, that second was a reference to the Orange Monster's recent tweet blaming the Department of Justice and Jeff Sessions for indicting two Republicans, this thug Duncan Hunter in California and this thug Chris Collins, Republican in New York. Trump's pissed off because indicting them might hurt their chance of keeping their seat. Trump wants fucking criminals all around him. Of course he does. Oh, my God. Trump had tweeted, if you remember, two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought to a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms by the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. Two easy wins, now in doubt, because there's not enough time. Good job, Jeff. Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, the investigation started after Trump became president, not during the Obama era. Now, it's Trump that's urged investigations of his political opponents, too, including Hillary Clinton. You know, he's tweeted shit like, there's so much guilt by Democrats / Clinton, and now the facts are pouring out. Do something, Trump tweeted last year. Jesus Christ almighty. On Russia and Putin, Obama launched an attack on what he described as Trump and the Republican Party's position on Russia. And this Nazi who is the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin. And Obama said, quote, they're undermining, the Republicans are undermining our alliances, cozying up to Russia. And then he said, what happened to the Republican Party? Its central organizing principle in foreign policy was the fight against communism. And now they're cozying up to the former head of the KGB, actively blocking legislation that would defend our elections from Russian attack. What happened? End quote. Well, And I think Obama well knows that Russia is no more communist any longer than Idaho is communist. It is fascist, purely and simply. On the Paris Climate Agreement, Obama kind of ripped into Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement last year. He reminded the crowd today that the United States, out of all the countries that have signed on to this, was alone in abandoning the pact. And yes, I know, and you know too, that the Paris Climate Agreement does nothing. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. To stop global warming. On the other hand, it's not intended to. It was intended to be a beginning, to get people, all the heads of states around the globe, to agree to limit within the next 15, 20 years the amount of global warming to be allowed because of the amount of carbon dioxide to be allowed into the atmosphere. A reduced number, but a continuation of CO2 being injected in the atmosphere nonetheless. Anyway, Obama said this today, quote, the only nation on earth to pull out of the global climate agreement, it's not North Korea, it's not Syria or Russia or Saudi Arabia, it's us, the only country. There are a lot of countries in the world. We're the only one. Obama said that Trump had, quote, rejected science and rejected facts on things like climate change, end quote. The attacks on Obamacare, which Barack Obama has to consider fairly personal, he spoke out in defense of his main domestic achievement, which Trump has repeatedly attacked and sought to destroy. And why is Trump doing that? Because it has Obama's name attached to it. That's the only reason. That's the only reason. The medical establishment, the medical industrial complex, they are satisfied with Obamacare. They're not leading the attack. It's this pig in the White House. Obama said, quote, they're sabotaging the Affordable Care Act. And if they're still in power next fall, you better believe they're coming at it again. They've said so. End quote. In fact, this Christian monster, this Christ-killing Mike Pence, the vice president, said last month that Republicans would try to repeal it again if they do well in the midterms. What the fuck does Mike Pence, what does he gain? He claims to be an uber-Christian. Oh, he's such a Christian. you know, Jesus first, you know, his family second, and the nation third, or some such garbage, some such horseshit from this religious nutball. But where in Christianity does it instruct Mike Pence to deny people health insurance and coverage? Where? Mike Pence is not a Christian. He's a fucking Antichrist follower. And the Antichrist, of course, is this monster in the White House. Not that I believe that shit, but that's what the Christians have been talking about for 2,000 years, the Antichrist. He shows up and the fuckers vote for him. On Puerto Rico, he said, quote, I know there are Republicans who believe government should only perform a few minimal functions. But one of those functions should be making sure that nearly 3,000 Americans don't die in a hurricane and its aftermath, end quote. Well, like I said earlier, just seeing Obama giving a talk, just seeing him on the stage, it just hit me right in the gut. I mean, there were a lot of things I found fault with where it concerned Obama's presidency. BF deal, you know what I'm saying? But the comparison between this useless hunk of slob that's the president now and Obama, the comparison is just so painful. It's so painful. You know, after 20 months, I'm still just completely blown away as to how, I mean, I know how Trump got elected. You know, he didn't get the popular vote. He lost it by 3-4 million votes. I understand that. But this electoral, this racist electoral college bullshit that gave Trump the electoral vote, aided and abetted by the Russian military intelligence. I mean, I understand how it happened, but I just can't fucking believe that it only took, what was it, 110,000, or no, not even that many. 18,000, 20,000 votes spread across four states were enough to give this monster the Electoral College. Jesus Christ. You know, I saw something in the little bit of Trump's speech the other night in Montana. I saw something, I wasn't quite sure what I was seeing, but a couple of times when I forget what channel I was watching, but when it flipped over to this monster giving another one of his bullshit, incoherent, look at me, I'm crazy speeches in Montana, the people behind him looked different from one shot to the next. It looked at, what the fuck? Well, today I find out why. People behind him, you know how they always give seats away to people to sit behind Trump. So when the cameras, and I don't know, I still don't know why media doesn't attend. Maybe because they're waiting to see if they can record literally a live shot when somebody goes berserk and tries to take out Donald Trump. But they always stack the bleachers behind Trump with Trump supporters so that the fake news media has a not fake audience behind Trump. Can you fucking believe this? The audience behind Trump is totally fake. But I digress. So what I was seeing was people behind Trump were removed and replaced during the rally. And if you go to Huffington Post, they have a series of videos up and this was happening while Trump was speaking. It's all right there. You can see a couple of less than enthusiastic men being removed, and in their places are two bimbo-looking blondes who were put back there to open their mouths and hold their signs and cheer for this rapist son of a bitch standing in front of them speaking. It's right there. You can see it happen. You know, if you're going to have the hallowed position of behind Trump, right in the direct line of fire, if the gross son of a bitch farts in your face, then you better be enthusiastic and jump around and maybe be a blonde 20-something and hold up your sign, or your ass will be removed. And he calls the media fake. He calls the media fake. I'll be right back. Right Wing Watch, which is part of People for the American Way, has a very quick article up. It's about this right-wing nutfuck named Josh Bernstein. Josh Bernstein. He posted a video last week in which he warned that if Democrats gain control of Congress in the midterm elections coming up and then try to impeach Trump, it will lead to, his words, the most violent, bloodiest revolution in the history of the United States, end quote. Well, well, well. In this telecast or whatever it was, this videocast, after he said that liberals hate those who voted for Trump, and we use the power of government to systematically punish them, Bernstein called on Republicans and conservatives to, quote, do whatever you can to prevent Democrats from winning control of Congress in the midterms of this, or else this country is going to be torn apart. He said this, quote, we have a situation that is so desperate, so dangerous. If these people, God forbid, take over, it's just going to be a disaster. He went on. Quoting, if they do try to impeach this president, it's not going to be pretty, folks. There are millions of Americans like myself and the people watching this show that absolutely love President Trump. He's done amazing things. He has accomplished things that no president has ever accomplished in his first 2 years. And you have the audacity to try to take that away from us? Go ahead and try it. Bring it on, liberals. Come on, bring it on. You want a revolution? You try to impeach our president? You'll see the most violent, bloodiest revolution in the history of the United States. I'm not making any veiled threats. I'm just letting you know the reality of the situation. You punk, fuck you. You punk. Joshua Bernstein? You got a very Hebraic name there, Josh. I doubt, though, that you're a Jew. Why are you talking that kind of violence for a racist, anti-Semite son of a bitch who would cut your throat and giggle while you laugh? What the fuck is wrong with you, Bernstein, if you really are a Jew? But I don't really care if you're a Jew or a fucking donkey's ass. You are threatening bloody death and revolution if the American people, through its legislators, present evidence that this worthless piece of shit needs to be removed from office? Okay. Here's something the phony Jew Josh Bernstein should be investigating or targeting for his racist, nasty-ass commentary. And that is that today Trump said he wanted Jeff Sessions to investigate the source of that op-ed, that anonymous op-ed published in the New York Times the other day, which has the net effect of intensifying his attack on this article that he's characterized as an act of treason. an act of fucking treason. Look up the word, you stupid, stupid monster. Jesus. Speaking to reporters on Air Force One as he traveled to Fargo, North Dakota, Mr. Trump said, quote, I would say Jeff should be investigating who the author of that piece was because I really believe it's national security. He also said he's considering action against the Times. Yeah, right. This goes back. This is holdover shit from when Trump was a mob infiltrated construction a builder, whatever you want to call him in New York. It was always with the threats. Always with the threats. I'm considering action against you. You want the money I owe you? Fuck you. If you try to collect it, I'll sue you. You know, that kind of stuff. So he's been raging about that op-ed piece ever since it came out on Wednesday. And the latest remark indicate that he wants to use the Justice Department to find the source of the op-ed, which you'll remember described some administration officials in his inner circle in a state of near mutiny against this asshole. Trump said, quote, we're going to take a look at what he had, what he gave, what he's talking about, also where he is right now, end quote. I guess that he's talking about the anonymous writer. And in a statement today, the New York Times said such an investigation would be abuse of power. Oh, come on, New York Times. I mean, I realize you have to say that. But this monster that's in the White House, an abuse of power, not to him it isn't. It's the normal exercising of the power granted to him because he's president. But the Times said this, quote, we're confident that the Department of Justice understands that the First Amendment protects all American citizens and that it would not participate in such a blatant abuse of government power. The president's threats both underscore why we must safeguard the identity of the writer of this op-ed and serve as a reminder of the importance of a free and independent press to American democracy, end quote. And then a spokeswoman at the Department of Justice said that the Department of Justice does not confirm or deny the existence of investigations. And on the one hand, Trump tries to demean or belittle the person who wrote the op-ed by suggesting that he was probably not a senior official. He immediately contradicts himself, Trump does, by saying that the person might nonetheless have a security clearance that allowed him or her to attend sensitive meetings on China, Russia, or North Korea. Trump added, I don't want him in those meetings. Trump also escalated his attack on the book by Bob Woodward, Fear. Trump described it as a, quote, total fraud. And he said, I don't talk that way. The fuck you don't, you half-literate moron. Of course you do. I don't talk that way. Let's see. Well, what you do, you grab them by the pussy. They love it. Oh, wait. You didn't say that, did you, Trump? He also said libel laws should be tightened so it'd be easier to go after Mr. Woodward for what Trump says is just a whole bunch of lies. Trump said, quote, our libel laws are pathetic. Our libel laws should be toughened up so that if somebody writes things that are fraudulent and false, they get sued and they lose. I'm not even going to take that sentence apart. Fuck him. He's such a moron. Trump focused on a single part of Woodward's book, an episode where Woodward reported that Gary Cohn, who at the time was Trump's chief economic advisor, removed a piece of paper from Trump's desk that would have directed the United States to withdraw from a trade agreement with South Korea. The orange asshole said, quote, he never took a memo off my desk. Gary Cohn, if he ever took a memo off my desk, I would have fired him in 2 seconds. He would have been fired so fast. He would have been fired in 2 seconds. Woo! Trump also said he was really open to the idea of administering lie detector tests to members of his staff. I wonder if that include his daughter and son-in-law. What do you think? In order to determine the identity of the source of this op-ed. But Trump added, quote, eventually the name of this sick person will come out, end quote. Sick person. Jesus Christ. So we've had a week here of damaging disclosures, one after another. And now the orange monster is struggling to try to contain a narrative that describes his administration as being totally out of control, on the verge of total breakdown. And he keeps insisting that the White House is a well-oiled machine, and he blames the appearance of disarray, not on all the people that have left, not on all the people who have published insider reports on this shit. No, no, no. But it's all the fault of a vengeful and corrupt and fake news media, don't you know? Huh? And at that rally last night in Billings, Montana, where they kept moving people around because the people behind Trump weren't showing appropriate enthusiasm to Der Führer, he complained how the New York Times editorial page department had granted anonymity to the writer of that op-ed. He said, quote, you can't discredit because you have no idea who they are. It may not be a Republican. May not be a conservative. It may be a deep state person that's been in there a long time. Yeah, it probably is, Trump. They're under your desk. They're in your desk drawers. They're hiding in the closets. You know those curtains behind you when you sit at the desk in the Oval Office? If you look behind the curtains, you'll see two or three deep state people. They're there. They're all over the place. They're watching you, motherfucker. They're watching everything you do. At the rally, he said, it's a very unfair thing, but it's very unfair to our country and to the millions of people that voted really for me. Oh, my God. Ooh. Remember, part of the op-ed said, quote, meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back, end quote. Well, I repeat what I said last night and what Michelle Goldberg said this morning, what I quoted her saying an hour ago. Whoever wrote this anonymous op-ed, who claims that there is a whole cadre of people within the inner circle who are two-tracking this president, let him rant and fucking rave about the shit that he's talking about while they make sure that he doesn't lead us into some kind of a real disaster, although he's leading us into his disasters every day, this inner group, if it really does exist, ought to come clean. Stand up, you cowardly sons of bitches. Stand up. Identify yourselves. Come on, you rat fuckers. Stand up. Say who you are. Identify yourself and walk out. Walk out of the White House. Walk out onto Pennsylvania Avenue and stand there, all of you, with bullhorns and signs and TV cameras, and declare yourselves. Let your names be known. Let people know who you are and why you know what you know. To not do it is treason, you assholes. But to write a piece like, I don't fault the New York Times for printing it. But the people who wrote it, or the person who wrote it, referencing other people, and you make these kinds of claims, which I completely agree with, but you don't have the fucking nerve to identify yourselves and force this out in the open, What did you do today and yesterday? Your op-ed piece came out on Tuesday night, actually. So what did you do Wednesday, Thursday, and today? Are you continuing to make sure that this rancid son of a bitch maintains as president of the United States while you do what? Jesus Christ. Oh, well. If it ain't piss ants, it's bedbugs with this guy, right? That's an old Southern expression there, folks. If it ain't piss ants, it's bedbugs. What does tickle the hell out of me, though, is that the people who are denying, wasn't me, it's not me, not me. The denials from the inner circle have started to roll in, according to the Times, especially from because of what was said, that Trump is amoral, impetuous, petty, ineffective. The denials, although probably everybody on his staff has said that about him, including the cowards who won't step up and say, yeah, we wrote it, and we think the son of a bitch ought to be removed. Yesterday, a spokesman said that the mystery writer is not Mike Pence, the Uber Christian. Jared Agin, who is Pence's spokesman, said, quote, in a morning Twitter post, said, our office is above such amateur acts. Is that a denial? Doesn't sound like a denial to me. Sounds like maybe a statement of altitude. We're above such amateur acts, but it's not a denial, is it? Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, he said, it's not mine. Dan Coats, National Intelligence Director, responding to rumors that he or his principal deputy wrote the piece, said, patently false, we did not. And then press officers for the Secretaries of Defense, Homeland Security, Treasury, Housing and Urban Development also issued denials on behalf of their bosses. You notice none of the bosses issued the denials. They had somebody else issue the denial. Woo! Turn him or her over to the government at once. Yeah, exactly. The New York Times has this writer in a little cage down the basement of the New York Times, you stupid fuck you. Jesus. But what a week, huh? Nomination hearings for Kavanaugh, who is as much of a liar and a sneak and a son of a bitch as Trump is. Kavanaugh's like Zelig. He seems to have been everywhere since the Clinton administration. He was one of the people that kept pushing and pushing that Vince Foster was murdered by Hillary Clinton because she was tired of fucking him. And didn't want anybody to know about it, so she had him murdered. That was Brett Kavanaugh. And it was Kavanaugh that told Ken Starr, put it all out there, everything you find out about Trump and his girlfriend, blow jobs, whatever it is, get it out there. Let the people see it. Get it out there. Get it out there. Which Ken Starr did. This is our next Supreme Court justice. What a pig. And he's also one of the people, they called him, what did they call him, the Gucci Brigade or something? When the election of 2000, the presidential election of 2000, Gore Bush, and it got hung up because of the inability of the vote registrars or whatever to count the ballots in Florida. And the Florida Supreme Court said, let the voting continue. And a whole bunch of the Gucci, whatever, a whole bunch of white men led by Brett fucking Kavanaugh rushed down to Florida, to Palm Beach, where they were trying to count the ballots, pounding on the windows. Do you not remember those videos? That was Brett Kavanaugh and a whole bunch of punks from the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation, disrupting, destroying the vote count until the U.S. Supreme Court had time to say, stop the fucking counting. Because if you continue, it will jeopardize George W. Bush's position to be president. What the fuck? And we let that go. We let that go. The American people let that one go. Oh, okay. And that goddamn Al Gore, another chicken shit son of a bitch as far as I'm concerned politically. What did he say? Oh, well, I'm not going to contest it. The courts have spoken. Goodbye. Adios. See you later. I'm going to go make a movie about global climate change. Goodbye. Adios. And as a result of that, 2 million Iraqis and so far 5,000 or 6,000 Americans died. And war crimes were committed. And we became a torture state. Thanks, Al Gore. Thanks a lot. But that was Brett Kavanaugh. God damn it. Every shitty thing that has happened since the Clinton investigations, Ken Starr's investigation of a Whitewater land deal went on seven fucking years. Seven. Until they finally found out that Trump had gotten a blowjob from an intern and lied about, what was the traitor girl's name? Paula Smith. Paula Jones. Paula Andrews. Paula what the fuck ever, who cares? But all of these nasty, nasty events were either stage managed by or involved in by our next Supreme Court Justice, Brett Fuck You Kavanaugh. And all of this is being hidden. That's what's in these documents. Brett Kavanaugh cannot wait. I'm sure the case is already being put together to end Roe v. Wade, to end the right of people to organize in the workplace, to end Obamacare, to end any attempt to limit carbon emissions in this country. It's all being put together just waiting for this lying son of a bitch, Brett Kavanaugh, to be confirmed, which he will. And you know why he will? Because the only two people who can stop it right now, Senator Collins, Senator Murkowski, will not. I'll be right back. And before we run out of time here, Papadopoulos was sentenced today, George Papadopoulos. 14 days in jail. I know that doesn't sound like much, does it? Huh? But anyway, remember, Papadopoulos's name should be engraved someplace. It was an offhand remark that he made in a bar that led to the beginning of all this. He was a low-profile foreign policy campaign advisor. And in May of 2016, he made an offhand remark in a London bar that helped trigger an FBI counterintelligence investigation into Trump's campaign. And then in October, this past October, he pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about key details of his conversation with a London-based professor who had told him the Russians held dirt in the form of thousands of emails on Hillary Clinton. This is how this shit begins, you know? Well, what's the poem? For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the rider was lost. For want of the rider, the message was lost. For want of the message, the battle was lost. And all for the loss of a nail. Remember that? I know I got it wrong. Anyway, he asked the court for leniency, Papadopoulos did, and he said he made, quote, a terrible mistake for which I have paid a terrible price and I'm deeply ashamed, end quote. And he said he was motivated to lie to the FBI to try to, quote, create distance between the issue, myself and the president, end quote. And in hindsight, he said in court he recognized that was wrong and, quote, might have harmed the investigation. Papadopoulos' attorney, Thomas Breen, went further. He said, quote, the President of the United States hindered this investigation more than George Papadopoulos ever could by calling the investigation fake news and a witch hunt. Woo. So, going back to the beginnings of this shit, the part that Republicans have tried to confuse their brain-dead followers with, but here's an Australian diplomat reported to American counterparts that Papadopoulos had told him over drinks in London about this so-called dirt approach. And as a result of that, the FBI opened its investigation. And that was also around the time that WikiLeaks posted thousands of internal Democratic National Committee emails online. For want of a nail. Now, the sentencing this afternoon is part of Mueller's probe that has so far led to the indictments or convictions of 32 people. Witch hunt, huh? You fucking pig, Trump. Witch hunt? Yeah, okay. Papadopoulos, you remember, was the first Trump official to plead guilty and cooperate with the investigation into Russian interference in our last presidential election. And as a point of fact, federal sentencing guidelines under Papadopoulos' plea called for a penalty between probation, no jail time, and 6 months in prison. We got 14 days. And, of course, the Orange Monster has criticized the investigation and the Justice Department starting the day he was inaugurated. And Attorney Breen, Papadopoulos' attorney, told U.S. District Judge Randolph Moss, quote, the message here is to check your loyalty, tell the truth, and help the good guys, even if you have to pay a price. Trump not being one of the good guys. And today, aboard Air Force One, Trump played down his relationship with Papadopoulos. He said, quote, I see Papadopoulos today. I don't know Papadopoulos. I don't know. I saw him sitting in one picture at a table with me. That's the only thing I know about him. What a son of a bitch. And three other campaign officials. This is the fourth one. But Manafort, Rick Gates, and Michael Flynn all have either pleaded guilty or been convicted of various crimes. None of those three have been sentenced yet. Oh, but it's coming. Papadopoulos' attorneys had asked for probation for their client and said in court filings that Papadopoulos misled investigators to try to save his professional ambitions and out of, quote, perhaps a misguided loyalty to his master, end quote, but not for more sinister reasons. Oh, and as part of his sentence, in addition to the 14 days, oh well, he will also have 1 year of court supervision, 200 hours of community service, and he was fined $9,500. And in a 16-page sentencing memo seeking leniency, his attorneys, including Breen, a guy named Robert Stanley, and Todd Pugh, wrote this, quote, to say George was out of his depth would be a gross understatement. Despite being a young energy policy guru, he had no experience in dealing with Russian policy or its officials, end quote. And I would throw in he also had no experience in dealing with this monstrous son of a bitch who has gone on to become president. What a week. I wonder if I'll be saying the same thing next Friday. Probably. I hope you have a good weekend. I'll see you Monday. In the meantime, take care and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, man. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Oh, yeah. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.
Hi, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. As you know, we've switched formats and are now broadcast exclusively on the Progressive Voices Network. So that means you get fewer program interruptions, no corporate commercials, and lots of profanity. But our format change also means some of our radio listeners no longer hear the program. It's been a while since I mentioned our podcasts, so you may have forgotten that there is a way to listen to this program anytime you need a good dose of screaming. Visit MikeMalloy.com and subscribe to our podcast. You have your choice. You can listen to the ranting with the audio podcast or listen and watch me lose control with a video podcast subscription. As a podcast subscriber, you can download the program to your mobile device and take me with you wherever you go. And if you have a friend who needs a dose of truth seeking, you can give a gift subscription as well. That's MikeMalloy.com, and never miss a minute of the uncensored fun and frivolity.